It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And we come to you on the eve of the All-Star Game, which is a ton of fun. I'm a huge All-Star fan, but it's also an unusual time in fantasy since there are only 3 days of games next week. So I'm going to adjust a little of what we have to talk about, but we still have plenty, and we are going to get right at it. And we are going to start with some news. Just today, the Cubs called up Kyle Schwarber, and I'm not sure what to make of him, but boy, he was absolutely lighting it up at AAA. His stint at AAA did exactly what they hoped. He went down there, and he just started obliterating the ball. I'm pretty optimistic on Schwarber. I mean, I think that we should probably adjust, but we probably should have anyway, adjust what we think his ceiling is. I'm not sure Schwarber's ceiling is MVP caliber hitter over a full season, but as a guy who can get you some hits, hit some home runs, drive in some runs, there are definitely plenty of formats where I'm picking him up if he's available. Do you want to talk me down from that a little bit?
No, I don't think I'm going to completely talk you down from it. I think you hit on something when you said, I think we'll adjust a little bit of what his ceiling is. I do think Schwarber has gone, I think we just accept that Schwarber was probably way overrated in the fantasy world at the start of the season, was drafted too high. But just because that happened doesn't mean that he's a worthless asset going forward. Two things have happened that are bad for Schwarber's value. One is that obviously he underachieved. The second thing is that what he's good at, a lot of other players started doing this season with all these Logan Morrisons and Yonder Alonzos and Justin Smokes and everyone hitting, you know, home runs and joining mixed league lineups. And that's kind of what he was going to do. So maybe what Schwarber does isn't as coveted as it was a year ago. That being said, I think he's worth a flyer in a mixed league if he's outfield eligible. And I think he's for sure worth adding right away if he's catcher eligible. To me, that's a massive difference depending on, you know, what service provider someone's using and what their league format is.
Yeah, I think that's a really key point here is even though I'm optimistic on him relatively, he's just a guy as an outfielder. At this point, I don't think there's any reasonable read on Kyle Schwarber that sees him likely to be a star-level performer in the outfield from here to the rest of the season. He's just a guy. He's useful. You can have him. He's an option among other options, and he's a viable option. But he's not more than that if he's not a catcher. We go to the opposite of news, something that happened a little while back, but that we didn't really talk much about. I think maybe if you're looking for guys to avoid, guys to whom bad things are going to happen, I should just make the roster of my office league 10-team mixed team available, and you should just see anybody I drafted high, you should leave alone, because this is now Starling Marte, Trey Turner, and Yoenis Cespedes. So just, you know, if you're wondering about somebody, just I'll check if I have them and I'll tell you, and in that case, avoid that guy. But Turner had really been coming on. He had been racking up a ton of base hits. He'd been racking up a ridiculous number of steals. He had been extremely productive after a slow start. And so, while you were probably frustrated if you had Turner in April, he's going to leave a hole in your lineup right now. And so the question is, you know, the default when you've got a guy like that is you want to replace what he was doing for you. But I thought you made an interesting point in our notes, which is that he got so many steals that you might not need to replace the steals, or you might not need to entirely replace. So you might not need to worry about getting a speed guy to replace Turner, because if you had him, you might be coasting in steals. So when you look to replace a guy like that, how do you go about filling that hole on your roster?
Yeah, I mean, Turner owners really need to look at their standings and decide how they want to replace him. I mean, there's a lot of things to look at there as far as he could have been used by an owner in the outfield or at second base or at shortstop, so where they need to replace him matters. But, you know, as you were mentioning, in the steals category, I mean, he has 35 steals. So some Turner owners, if they had some other base dealers on their roster, maybe so far out in front in steals, or even if they're not in first, they may be like third in steals, but have a wide gap between them and the pack where they don't really need to replace him with stolen bases. And they could use this as an opportunity to replace him with a power hitter, you know, a high average hitter, like they can really look at what they need. Some Turner owners will need to chase steals, but for a lot of them, this is a really unique situation. If you lose a power hitter, because the power categories tend to be fairly bunched up, if you lose a power hitter, you probably need to replace them with a power hitter. But base stealers are not often like that, and we don't really know what's going to happen with Turner, and you could still get some steals, you know, late in the season from him. So it's a huge blow, but it's not a time for Turner owners to panic until they really assess their standing.
How high are you on Jose Ramirez? We've now got a year and a half of this guy being a high average hitter, and the power is new this year. Power is new this year for a lot of guys, but power is new this year. But we've now got a year and a half that suggests that even if he's not a 25 home run guy, he is a 310, 320 hitter. To what extent are you buying Ramirez at least as an elite hitter, if not a power hitter?
Yeah, I'm really buying it. I'm really high on him. As you mentioned, like a 312 hitter last year and a 326 so far this year, and that's with a 333 BABIP. So BABIP's like not very high. Like that's pretty reasonable. And he's on pace for more than 25 home runs, so there's some power there. What I really like about Ramirez, you know, we've talked so much about how there are all these new power hitters. Well, here's someone who can really drive your team in the batting average category and still get his fair amount of RBIs and runs and home runs and may steal 15 to 20 bases this year. So I think owners need to start thinking of him as either, if he's not a top-tier third baseman, he's knocking on the door. And I think he probably is a top-tier third baseman. And maybe he might be a bit of the poster child for our thinking shifting in fantasy from, you know, chasing power hitters to chasing players who can consistently hit over 300 with respectable power.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's more and more. Like I said, this is something I've talked about a good bit this year. It's something I believe in. You know, I think anymore, guys who can get base hits are, it is approaching being a special, it's not all the way being a specialty category like steals or saves, but boy, it's really valuable. And if you can get a couple of guys who can help you out in other ways and not kill you in batting average, it's a really big boost.
When your team batting average starts to drop down into the low 260s, which is where a lot of fantasy teams are right now, a 320 hitter starts to become really, really attractive. And you get a couple Jose Ramirez types in your lineup, and all of a sudden you can take a lot more chances with the Joey Gallo type hitters and not have to worry so much about that batting average.
Let's talk prospects. We are virtually, I mean, we never know for sure until after the year is over. We're virtually certain that we are well past the Super 2 deadline. You know, we are at a point where it's really a baseball decision with all of these guys. These guys who are knocking on the door, these prospects that people were excited about at the beginning of the year, we're now at a point where it's a baseball decision. So as we move towards the second half, some pretty intriguing prospects having some nice years. Yoan Moncada, Ahmed Rosario, Ozzie Albies, Rafael Devers, Austin Meadows. I'm still not crazy about some of these guys from a fantasy perspective. The one guy that I've definitely got my eye on that I think could be up soon and could have an impact is Moncada. He has been producing at AAA all year long. There's nobody blocking him. He's a guy that I think we should be watching really closely. I think second on that list for me is probably Albies, who had a slow April and has really been crushing the ball ever since. But I'm still, you know, I'm not really hyped over some of these prospects. And Meadows still isn't hitting. Top 10 prospect, he's still just not hitting. Not hitting this year at AAA. Which of these guys do you think you should be keeping a particular eye on as we turn to the second half?
Yeah, I'm with you on Moncada. I think, you know, he's the one who could make a major impact because he can steal many bases and hit home runs. And even if he's just a 250 hitter when he first comes up, and there's going to be such a wide range there. If he hit 300, I wouldn't be shocked because he will hit the ball hard and he's fast. At the same time, if he hit 230, I wouldn't be shocked, but if there's some home runs and some steals there, I think he could be quite valuable. I would want to stash him. I agree with you on Albies, where I don't see exactly where he's going to play. And I haven't heard a lot about the Braves specifically trading Brandon Phillips, but I think it's a possibility, and then maybe he comes up to play second. And again, sometimes these things also just work themselves out, and maybe Freddie Freeman ends up back at first base, and Albies plays third. Who knows? I think Rosario is still interesting. I know the Mets have been really resistant to call him up. The reason I think he's interesting is for things that we've already discussed. He could hit for average right away, and he can steal bases, and those are coveted commodities in roto leagues right now. I'm with you on Meadows that I'm not interested. As far as Devers goes, I can't decide if I'm interested or not, because I would be really, really interested if he was the Red Sox starting third baseman down the stretch, and they're a contender who could use a third baseman. At the same time, they're also a team with deep pockets that may just deal for a veteran. Like, do you think that there's ever a time this season where Devers is their regular third baseman?
It's hard for me to see, just because he's still a double A. I mean, they're not really in a hurry even to get him to triple A, never mind the majors. I agree that if he gets there, everything changes. He becomes really high on that list. He is doing a lot of things to like at double A, and he's a really intriguing player. But it's hard for me to see any urgency on the part of the Red Sox. I just don't see that being in their plans. So I will put it this way. And look, you can go from double A to the majors. There is some argument that it's the way to do it, that double A is where the prospects are and triple A is where the washed up guys are. But that seems less and less common. And so Devers sort of gets on my radar when he gets to triple A. At that point, then I start being interested. But I think until he's there, I'm a little resistent. Again, not to the player, just the opportunity.
Yeah, I was going to say, I also wonder if Devers could be hurt a little bit by what happened with Moncada with the Red Sox last season, where they brought him up September 1st kind of thinking that he could maybe be a bit of a savior for them at third base. They didn't really give him a long leash, and he didn't do very well initially. And then they were kind of left just mixing and matching in some really important games in September. So I could also see the Red Sox, even though, and it's not fair, that's not fair to the next guy to be blamed for the last guy, but I could see also the Red Sox saying, no, we're not going to go down that road again and possibly get burned again. We're just going to, I mean, I'm sure there'll be a respectable third baseman out there they can get for not that much as far as a return goes at the trade deadline, and then they're covered. And then maybe he's just up as a bench bat or something like that in September, and then he's not really a fantasy commodity.
That's sort of where my read is. Eric Thames kind of looking like maybe the guy that we thought he was going to be coming into the year, which is more of a low-average slugger than the destroyer of worlds that he was in April. I still think he has real value. I think at this point, the sort of on balance, you look at what he's done over 3 months, I think this is maybe a pretty good look at what he is for real. So I'm not cutting bait. To me, I'm a hold on Thames. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, and I wanted to bring him up today because I was asked many times on Monday on Twitter, Thames owners saying, can we drop him? And I'm not there. Like, I know there's a lot of power out there right now, but I can't drop a guy with 23 home runs at the All-Star break. Like, even if he did slump in June, I mean, he just had a two-homer game, you know, this week, so maybe he'll come around. But, I mean, overall this season, he's hitting 245. I know it's been an uneven 245, but I think he could be a 245 hitter. He's only stolen two bases, and I thought he could steal a little more than that because the Brewers do like to run a bit. I wouldn't be surprised if you see him steal five bases, say, in the second half, which does matter. But I wouldn't cut him. He'd have to go in a probably this slump would have to extend throughout July. I think if we were still talking about him slumping in another month, I wouldn't cut him. And this is a good time, I think, also, like with the All-Star break here, for owners to be a little bit patient with players like this because, you know, even if you want to bench them in a shallow league until they heat up, like you basically have a free week here to give your player some time to clear his head and see where he comes out of the break.
And in particular, for a guy like Thames, you know, this is the first time he's been counted on like this every day for a major league team. I realize he missed a little time, but you know, some of these guys who busted out hot young, you know, he's not young, but inexperienced big leaguers who have faded, you know, some of these guys are going to benefit just from having some time off. Some of these guys are going to come back and they're just playing this game every day is hard and it takes a lot out of you. And there are definitely guys who are going to benefit just from giving their bodies 4 days of rest. I don't know if he's one of them, but some of them will. A couple of guys, an interesting parallel, you know, you sent me this note about Machado and Donaldson, and I thought there's a really interesting parallel. Both of them, they had extremely similar Junes in that in both guys' cases, if you basically give them 30 points of batting average for June, then it was a completely normal average month for them. You know, they aren't that far off over the past month. I think Machado's year looks uglier for a non-fantasy reason, which is that he doesn't walk nearly as much, and so his low batting average is compounded by a really ugly on-base percentage. But, you know, these guys are still pretty productive fantasy players, and they've both been – you look at their Junes, they were both pretty all right. You know, neither of those guys' Junes screams at you, but if either of those guys had that month in the course of another season, you wouldn't say what's wrong with them. You'd say, oh, okay, you know, not a great month, but that's fine. So, you know, I'm still, you know, a little concerned, and particularly concerned about Machado, just because I feel like, you know, making out 71-72% of the time can wear on somebody. I had a really uncharacteristic play in the field. I think it was yesterday. You do kind of wonder the combination of a struggling year, a struggling team, a young guy, a guy who's there already starting to talk about, you know, coming into this year, a guy people were already starting to talk about as a $300 million player in a couple of years. You do wonder if that kind of builds on him a little bit in a way that I don't worry as much about Donaldson. But I'm still pretty optimistic on both of these guys. Do you see separators between them from a fantasy perspective?
Well, first of all, I guess age is a separator, just that with Donaldson, we could say, and we probably already saw the best of Donaldson. I mean, basically a 950 OPS each of the previous two seasons. Like, he may never go back there, and he probably won't, but it doesn't mean he can't be really good. Whereas Machado, like, if we've already seen, maybe we've already seen the best of Machado, but if he can't at least reproduce what he did the previous two seasons a few more times in his career, I think we'd be really disappointed. So with Machado, it's like this inexplicable down year that has come with a really low BABIP. So some of it has been bad luck. With Donaldson, you wonder if maybe he's peaked a little bit. And I think with both players, where I see a parallel also is their supporting casts have been disappointing. The Blue Jays have been a very low-scoring team this year around Donaldson, and the Orioles lineup's been very disappointing as well. So they're not getting as many chances to drive in and score runs as they were in previous years, because those are two lineups that we typically think of as really productive. So I think I'm willing to, in my head, I think they're not, I wouldn't value them as kind of first round picks anymore. For like, if I was, you know, talking trade market right now, which is what really matters, but I'm not going to, I think I just mostly hold them because I don't feel good about just selling them at a steep discount. Now, I'll give you, to go back to earlier in the episode, I'll give you a good parallel. Would you trade either one of them for Jose Ramirez?
It'll be really tough to do. Again, you know, I often cop out this way. It would depend on needs. But, you know, and that's part of where the difference in the batting averages comes in. You know, I'd have to think about trading a 220 Machado for 320 Ramirez. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to at least think about it.
Yeah, I think I would be, if I was floundering a little bit in my league, I would be willing, I think, to do it and just hope that Ramirez hits 320 again in the second half with another, you know, 13, 14 home runs. I mean, Machado or Donaldson could hit 20 home runs in the second half, but even at their normal paces, they're probably going to hit about 15. Well, if Ramirez can hit 10 or 12 even in the second half, that's not a big power gap. And can Machado and Donaldson keep up with Ramirez in batting average? Probably not. Who's going to steal more bases? Probably, well, almost certainly Ramirez. So, I mean, the fact that the Indians lineup, I think, is probably better than the Orioles or the Blue Jays lineup also has to factor in. And I'm not saying that for sure next season I would draft Ramirez over them. That I'll have to think about in the winter. But just for the second half, I may rather have the players who's just hitting really well right now.
We move to starting pitchers, and we open our starting pitcher discussion with a guy I really like. I am buying Jimmy Nelson. I like the strikeout rate. I like the walk rate. He's been pretty doggone good, and he just keeps doing it. I'm in. He is more than a stream option for me, even in a 10-team mixed. Are you buying him too?
Yeah, totally. When I look at his other stats, you know, 366 BABIP against, totally reasonable, like something that he can sustain and keep that whip around 1.2. He's really someone, and I don't profess to be the biggest expert on pitching in the fantasy industry. I think I do an okay job with pitching. I know there's other people who study it, and that's like all they do. But when I look at Nelson, he looks a little bit to me like someone who, you know, didn't do well earlier in his career, probably started nibbling a lot more because his walk rate just kept getting higher and higher. So he's probably nibbling because he's not doing well, and he's trying to get batters out, hoping they'll chase. And then maybe this year someone got to him and said, like, trust yourself and throw strikes, because the strikeout rate's way up, the walk rate is way down, and that's made all the difference. And now, like, with a K per nine over nine, and, you know, and a low ERA, like, I think, yeah, he's in every week. And the Brewers are supporting him really well. It's a quality lineup. They have a good closer. You know, if he can go and throw seven innings, there's a really good chance of picking up wins.
And then we go from him to a guy that, you know, I was skeptical on even earlier in the year, and I thought for a while that I was going to look pretty dumb for having been skeptical on him. And that's Fantasy 411 icon, Big Irv, Irvin Santana, has been really rough lately. And there is, you look deeper, and there's just not much to like there. You know, he's never been a guy who struck out a lot of batters. He's given up home runs. He's given up walks. It's going pretty badly for him right now. And, you know, I just it went, the low ERA lasted for long enough that I almost started to believe, probably did start to believe. There's probably like one start where I was like, okay, this is just really going to be a thing. He's not going to strike out a ton of guys, but he's going to keep posting some ridiculous ERA. I don't think you can count on him to post a ridiculous ERA, and if he doesn't have a lot of value. I definitely can see a lot of formats where I am willing to drop him for somebody who might become available. I hate to say that again, Fantasy 411 icon, but I am definitely down on Big Irv. Do you see more reason for optimism than I do?
Okay, I'm going to jump in and save Big Irv, and I'll take the 411 supporting Big Irv side a little more. I totally get all the reasons. Now, first I'll start my argument by talking against it, where I'll say that he has a 467 FIP this season. His BABIP allowed still 220, so he's actually been pretty lucky still with his 299 ERA. But he was never the two-something. He's never been a two-something ERA type guy. Like, he's not legitimately that. But, you know, his career ERA is 4.04. When I look back prior to the season, in three of the previous four seasons, his ERA was below four. So he's pretty consistent of having, like, a mid-to-high threes ERA. This year, that plays really nicely because fantasy teams typically are having ERAs, like a team ERA around four. So I'm not ready to drop him yet unless I'm in a really shallow league and I want to maybe stream pitchers or there's someone, you know, really attractive. I would be using him more cautiously right now. So he'd be moving in my mind, he's, and I own him in the Yahoo Friends and Family League, and he's moved from use him every time out to, you know, pick my spots a little more carefully. Like, he's not going against the Yankees in my lineup or someone like that anytime, you know, in the coming weeks. But I'm not ready to drop him yet. I think, like I said, with the All-Star break, and I think I'm just going to wait till maybe late July and then see kind of where he's at. But there's still value for someone this year. There's value for someone who takes the ball every fifth game and gives you an ERA around four, like four flat. That has some value right now.
What about a guy who's not even doing that, like Justin Verlander?
Well, I'll say the same thing about Verlander as Santana, where I'm not dropping him. I'm definitely not dropping Verlander. I still think there's a trade market for him because he's, like, such a big name. I think I'm worried enough about Verlander that if I owned him, I would be interested in dealing him just on name value. And I would want to see if there's someone in my league who just hears the name Justin Verlander and is willing to give me a solid pitcher. Like, I don't know if the Jimmy Nelson owner in any league would trade him for Justin Verlander, but I would make that deal in a second and just get the pitcher. It's almost like the Machado Jose Ramirez that we just talked about, and just get someone who's playing really well right now and hope it continues, where we both feel good about Jimmy Nelson's skill set this year. I don't like what I'm seeing from Verlander with all the walks. If I could sell Verlander on name value for a pitcher I liked, I think I would do it. Would you take a similar plan if you owned Verlander, or would you hold him?
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think if you can get out and get some value for him, you should. You know, the difference between him and Santana for me is upside, is that you only have to look a year ago, and Verlander was an across-the-board stud. And you know, decline hits some pitchers harder and faster than others. You look at a guy like Felix Hernandez. But it has not been that long since Verlander was a guy you really wanted. So that's the difference to me between you know, looking, thinking again, as you know, that he's got some trade value and somebody that I would consider dropping. Unless there was somebody I really, really liked on the waiver wire, I would definitely wait it out more with Verlander if I couldn't trade him, just because of the hope that he could be something closer to what he's been very recently. You're just messing with me now. I finally got immune to Kevin Gausman. I finally just said, you know what, I'm just done. And now he's once again showing some signs in an Orioles rotation that is showing a sign here and a sign there. I have seen too much that I didn't like for too long now. I am not getting on board with Gausman. I feel like the blow-up potential is so bad. If you're really desperate, if you're in a deeper league, and you need a lottery ticket, I think he's a pretty good lottery ticket. But I couldn't rely on him at this point. As someone who has not been a Gausman believer and gotten burned by that quite as much as I have, what does a rational person say about Kevin Gausman right now?
Yeah, in 15-team leagues, Gausman was probably always owned. If he was dropped, he was probably just picked up right away by someone looking for a lottery ticket, even when he was really struggling. And so I think the big discussion here is more in like 12-team leagues. In 10-team leagues, I'm definitely not there yet. Just because he's almost like what you mentioned with Santana, like even a good Gausman's good, but it's not special. Like he's never had a WHIP of 1.20 in a full season. So, I mean, a good Gausman is usable. A good Gausman hasn't thus far in his career been like a really special player. So I think maybe the discussion is 12-team leagues, and I'm not racing out to pick him up. If he's on waivers in a 12-team league, I'll monitor him. If I had bench space, kind of, you know, I had some players coming back or some players get injured and I threw them on my DL and I had empty space, then maybe I would stash him on my bench. But I think sometimes I feel like Gausman's always been a little more hype than substance. This is someone who's had, you know, basically even before this season, was kind of around a 4.0 ERA, like a 1.3 WHIP in his career. So kind of usable, but not really special. He's someone we were hoping going into the season would take the next step. And then in actuality, right, he's taken a big step backwards. Let's just assume he's probably not going to take the next step in the second half. If anything, we get back to a 4.0 ERA pitcher, and that's probably not totally worth the risk if he's on your waiver wire.
So that's the starters, and we will move on to talk about closers in just a moment. But before we do, I want to take a minute to tell you about the StatCast podcast, a show dedicated to the analytics that drive front office decisions in the modern game. It's hosted by Mike Petriello and Matt Myers, and last week they dove deep into StatCast's new sprint speed metric, finally answering burning questions like which MLB catcher is actually the fastest and which teams around the league are the speediest on the bases and in the field. If that's something you want to hear about, you can download the show on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts by searching for StatCast Podcast or by going to www.statcastpodcast.com. And we now move to relievers, and I just could not have spoken any more unkindly about Sam Dyson's performance the last time we talked about him. But it turns out the people who run the San Francisco Giants know a little bit more than I do. I know we're all shocked, but it turns out that is the case, and he's been pretty good. At this point, I hate to overreact to 12 innings, but probably overreacted to the previous 30. At this point, if you need saves, are you at least at a point where you wouldn't be scared to pick up Dyson?
Yeah, well, okay, if I needed saves, I would be really scared of Sam Dyson, but I would probably use him anyway. That's kind of where I'm at with him. Sometimes I get those questions on Twitter where people say, should I be nervous to put Sam Dyson in my lineup, or do you trust Bud Norris? And I'll say no, but I'd put him in my lineup anyway. So sometimes you just have to take a leap of faith. Like, if you needed saves, and you're probably a lot of Melanson owners, right? If you needed saves, go ahead and pick him up. You're jumping off really fast. Like, the first blown save, maybe he's out of your lineup, even if he's still their closer.
Cardinals are a curious situation. There was an interesting piece in the Joe Sheehan newsletter recently about closers and the Cardinals, and one of the things that Joe noted was that Mike Matheny, more than nearly any manager, has been absolutely dogmatic in his use of the ninth inning. He has had a closer, and he has not often even changed the course of a season unless injury has stepped in. He is really emphatic. He has his guy. for the first time, we're halfway into a season, and it's really not clear who the Cardinals guy is. We talked about these guys a week or two ago, but I think it's less clear instead of more clear. These guys are both pretty good pitchers. My gut says that Rosenthal is not going to have a lot more chances. My gut says that Rosenthal gets another chance or two, if that. And as soon as O shows that he is sorted out, that O gets the job. I just am not sure they trust Rosenthal. I think that he better seize it emphatically really quickly. How do you read that situation?
Yeah, I mentioned last week that heading into the season, I was really high on O, and I'm going to be a little stubborn, I think, on this one. And I still think he's the best pitcher in that bullpen. I know he hasn't performed as well as he did last season. He's still the one that I want to own, and I think he's the one who I'm willing to be wrong on. I would totally pick up Rosenthal if I needed saves and he was just sitting on waivers. Like, I would grab him, and because you never know. But if I was going to predict, you know, which one gets more saves the rest of the season, I'm still going to take O. And if I was going to predict which one could actually just be really good the rest of the season, then I would take O by a mile. I don't think Rosenthal will be really good the rest of the season. If he gets some saves, that's fine, but I just don't think he has it in him right now to be like a really good shutdown closer. I think there'll be too many walks. I think there'll be too many hiccups. I think O could be really good, or he couldn't be. With Rosenthal, I'm just not excited.
Yeah. And to me, again, the point I would make is that if Rosenthal is not shut down, I don't think he holds the job.
Yeah.
Matt Bush, we talked about recently. It's the Rangers. We got to talk about the Rangers. I'm not ready to completely cut bait yet, but my faith is wavering. What's your assessment of Bush right now?
Yeah, we talked last week, and we both spoke really favorably about being patient with him, and then it's like maybe the Rangers were listening and then immediately lost their patience with him. But and he had kind of gotten the kiss of death a little bit. They talk about with a closer or sometimes even with a manager where, you know, he had they were saying all the right things about having faith in him, and then all of a sudden switched gears and pulled him out of the role for now. I'm not dropping Bush yet. In a 10-team league, if there's just a surplus of closers on the waiver wire, then maybe. But overall, I'm not dropping Bush yet. I would be interested, even though he's on the DL, if I had an empty DL slot, I would stash Keone Kella just because it looks like his shoulder injury is going to be a fairly brief, you know, one on the disabled list. And he has been their best reliever this season. I know there were like kind of personality issues with him in spring training, but I haven't heard anything about that in a while. So if he gets back from the DL and the Rangers still don't have a closer, then he could be the guy. And he has that added bonus right now of you can put him on your DL if you have a DL spot available, which for Bush, you need to put him on your bench.
So we will close this out with a couple of guesses. Who do you have closing for the Braves on August 1st? And I think my answer to this is Vizcaino. But I'm also not really – I don't have a lot of conviction in that.
My answer is going to be Jim Johnson, and I think the Braves are not going to trade him. And I know that – like, I wouldn't mind stashing Aroldis Vizcaino right now. I know he's on the DL just in case he comes – like, just in case he ends up as their closer. But because Johnson's under contract next season, and I don't think – I think the Braves see themselves as, like, maybe outside shot contenders down the stretch here this year even a little bit. And I think that they definitely see themselves as a team that can contend for the postseason next year. Whether they're right or wrong is beside the point. I think they see themselves that way. And I think that unless they're overwhelmed with an offer for Johnson, then they'll keep him and be happy to have a veteran closer next year who's not an awesome closer, but it's a closer for them. And I don't think they're going to get blown away on an offer for him. So I think that Jim Johnson will be. So that makes, I guess, Vizcaino not one of my favorite stashes right now.
Yeah. And same question for the White Sox, with the acknowledgement that, to me, the interesting question is, it wouldn't be shocking if the White Sox dealt one of their setup men and held on to Robertson because they could get more. So that kind of complicates that question. They are very likely to sell. But the question is, do they sell Robertson or do they sell some of the guys who set up for him?
That's right, and there's no stash value. They can't stash Robertson, so I mean, we'll just guess that, you know, that they might move him. And he's been pretty good this year. He does have that kind of closer tag. And even though I know a lot of fantasy people like to get away from that, look at who the real best relievers are on a team, I do think that matters to teams, you know, that Robertson's proven he can be a closer. I'm going to guess that they do trade Robertson. I'll go with Tommy Canley as my Nats or as my White Sox closer on August 1st. But you're totally right that Canley, for example, could be traded as well. I don't think that any White Sox pitcher or, sorry, reliever is off limits in trade talks right now. Do you?
No, I wouldn't think so. The one thing about Robertson is that, you know, unlike some of these guys, unlike, for example, an Alex Colome, I think if Robertson gets dealt, he closes. I think David Robertson is closing somewhere in August and September. You know, you look at somebody like Colome, it would not shock me if somebody picked him up to pitch the eighth, but I would be very surprised because of the contract if that happened with Robertson. So the one thing is, you know, you certainly could stash somebody like a Canley thinking that he could get saves in Chicago or in, I don't know, Washington, for example. Mm-hmm. But I think regardless, Robertson is closing for somebody through the end of the year.
Yeah.
Well, we do not have any two-star pitchers next week because it is not the era of Old Hoss Radbourne, so nobody is starting twice in 3 days. So that's Fantasy 411 for this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking the time to talk.